Well, Roberta, we are back once again with season four. How are you doing?
Doing good. We're finally back in the show.
Yeah. You don't sound...
Well, I'm actually, to be honest, these two episodes actually were pretty good, and there's some great moments, I think, but it's funny. Like, before the show, we were talking about how it feels like the show is going to go on forever, and that, you know, it's so... It's weird to, I mean, I of the stuff I enjoy, I really do enjoy. Like, I do enjoy a lot of the acting, and this episode, I was glad had a, you know, fourth wall breakage, and had you know, Frank address the audience in his usual Frank manner. But it's like, it's so weird watching this show and wanting to know more about the B-line stories and the A-line story. If that makes any sense.
I agree. So, sort of the side B stories, and because we're okay. Just for the record, for our listeners, we are covering season four, episode two, chapter 41, and episode three, chapter 42. So you know, if you haven't watched up to the end of episode three, then pause, go watch it, and come back. But yeah, in these two stories, our sub stories are sort of, you know, they're so closely related to the main story, but, you know, obviously it's Lucas. We see Lucas in episode three. And then there's the whole ongoing kind of who can you trust, with Meacham, Stamper, and Seth. And,
right.
And then we get a little bit of Jackie and Remy.
Yeah, which that seems like it's also an interesting kind of thing. Like, I liked, I of the things I enjoyed with Jackie, and Remy, I really did enjoy the fact that, who is it, Claire's, at the time.
Leanne. Mm-hmm.
Who I wonder if how Leanne, I don't think Leanne's gonna come back in the fray in any capacity. Just in terms of money and everything else, cause she, or maybe she will because of it. I don't really know. I can't remember. But ultimately I like when Leanne and Remy were interacting before during like the State of the Union. And how after the interaction, like, Remy completely got cold feet and was like, I like Remy as a character because I like that he wants out of this whole mess. And as he sees it approaching, he just keeps running. And I think that's actually a really strong character point of him. Just like, he's completely out of it. And even the remote, like, idea, like, he's with Jackie and, like, Jackie's like, you know, like, well, come on in, you know, we should go hang out in California kind of thing. And he's like, nah, that's cool. I'll think about it.
He was fine until he met with Leanne, yeah. And she implied that she knows.
Yeah. Right, exactly. And right. He's just like, I can't do this anymore. I can't have this moment of, like, he can't, and I like that. I like the idea of having a Remy character that's trying desperately to stay out of the fray. Because again, that's interesting. That's different from the Remy character before that was all about, you know, boosting politics, working in terms of private sector, whatever. But now he's just like, he's done with it. And I like the idea of this character just adamantly doing everything he can to not get into it, even though there's nothing he can do about it because of that photographer that was hanging around. Like, you know, because again, we're talking about this before the show of the idea of Chekhov's gun, the idea that something has to happen with whatever, and knowing those photos are in anyone's hands, that's some scandal waiting to happen.
Yeah,
I just don't know where.
Right. Right, definitely. And then I guess the other story. Yeah, and so basically Leanne, that was what I had listed as Leanne is kind of a sub story of her own. But she's turning out to be quite the Doug Stamper, isn't she?
Yeah, she's trying. I mean, she's trying to figure out stuff like that. I mean, I do like Leanne, and I liked the idea of her. I wonder if she will be the equivalent. I bet you she will become the equivalent, actually, of Stamper to Claire.
Well, she has a gun.
She does have a gun. But what's interesting, again, is that she, I don't think, like, she's very smart. Because when Claire was at the time, during episode two, was like, I should run this year. She's like, well, I'm going to need more money.
Yeah.
And very well, you know, very good amount of, you know, chunk of change when you find out how much it truly was. And she's also, you know, I think the only difference is that where Stamper is loyal, I think Leanne can go to the highest bidder. I think Leanne is like any other political person, will go to the highest bidder and not think twice about it.
Definitely.
Where I see Stamper as more of a very loyal. I mean, again, you know, everything that's happened between him and Frank is that. And I don't see this. I see her as having the tactics that Stamper has, but where Stamper kind of gets the advantage is that he is loyal to a fault to Frank sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that makes him a far more interesting character than Leanne, just because Leanne is, there's nothing different between like Leanne and Remy, for example.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking that, that's the difference between them, is that she doesn't have that history with Claire, so of course she's going to go with the highest bidder at this point. But, you know, it does seem like they kind of have this sort of compatibility or relationship that she could become as loyal as Stamper,
yeah,
maybe in about 15 years.
I would say the same thing.
Yeah.
Only because, again, we didn't see Doug, obviously, at the beginning of him and Frank's career, so it could have been similar for all we know.
And Claire did say to Leanne when she was asking to hire her on, she said, I want the next 30 years of your life, so tell me what it's going to cost of your career.
Right, exactly. So that could be how it goes down.
Yeah. So so while we're talking, we might as well get these sub-stories kind of out of the way, you know, really.
Let's get the interesting sub-story out of the
way.
Yeah,
the stuff we want to talk about, really.
The one I want to talk about, and that is, of course, and it's so weird because it's not even a big story. Like, in the episode side of things, and this is sort of what's become weirdly apparent, just like, man, some of these stories, I'd rather watch than the A stories. And maybe this just tells us a little bit about what kind of series I want to watch versus House of Cards. But for episode three, and it's such a throwaway moment, but it becomes this major thing, is we get back to Lucas, you know, and he is cleaning cars, like a commoner, so to speak. I jokingly say that, but this is the guy that was writing for, you know, one of the biggest papers in the series, and now he's, you know, vacuuming cars, and no one knows who he is, and except for, you know, people who are actually in that society. And it's amazing to see Lucas slowly but surely lose everything and lose all hope, because I like what desperate men tend to do in this series.
Yeah, he's really fallen from being one of the an esteemed editor of the Washington Herald, kind of equivalent to the Washington Post in the United States, or at least that's what they kind of portray. So he's gone from that. He's now a convicted felon, and he's cleaning cars, and he's got to do favors for some...
Favors is a good way of saying it.
Family friendlier.
Right. There are other terms which I don't, you know, I know that I can't curse on the show.
Prison favors. That's a better.
I don't know the other levels of implications that you can do, and I don't know what the UK equivalent of a generality term for that is. But it's so cool to see that, because, like, it gives me so much hope that they take this somewhere and make something interesting. Because, again, like, I think the moment that made me really like the character of Lucas and like the idea of a completely broken Lucas was when it was Dunbar and him
in the stairwell.
And he's pleading. He is, like, begging. And Dunbar, like any other sane person who has no idea what's going on, because anyone ever truly knew what went on, you know, Frank wouldn't be around anymore. He'd be in, you know, prison and rotting in debtor, you know, some type of jail cell, as he probably deserves.
Mm-hmm.
But because that knowledge isn't public, and because only this crazy man who was a convicted felon who is a convicted, like, terroristic level felon, mind you. Not like, oh, he went to jail for, you know, for tax evasion or whatever. Like, no, I mean, I'm saying tax evasion isn't serious. But this is a level of, like, you know, that he's at. Like, the point where she's, like, she brings up that, like, talking to you would be in breach of something. And I can't remember what she said it would be in breach of.
Oh, I believe it was the witness protect. She abbreviated, but it was the right. Witness Protection Act, or,
right? Something like that. But she was very importantly saying that, like, that I'd be in breach of this, and I'm not comfortable with that. And it, just to see him do all this stuff, and then as she walks away, he doesn't like just like, you know, put his head down in defeat.
He's crying.
He weeps openly, and I'm like, this is a broken man. And a broken man who has lost everything is far more interesting than anything else in this series. Because so far, if you see men that lose it all, they tend to, or about to lose it all, things go crazy, things go weird.
Yeah, like, yeah. We almost got that from Stamper. He was really starting to lose it.
And that was an amazing scene. As terrible, you know, again, him kind of killing his past this last season was an amazing scene, an amazing thing. Sure, it may bite him in the butt later on, but I love that scene of the, you know, it's very much a physical and metaphorical way of, like, you know, killing his past and kind of just cutting the tie with it. It was an amazing sequence. I want to see that with Lucas because that seems far more interesting than him getting revenge on Frank. Not because I don't want Frank to be punished. I think Frank will be punished in the end. That's the only way the series ends. I don't know how, per se, but he's going to. It's all going to catch him somehow.
It has to.
But I don't want it to be Lucas. Not because I don't want Lucas to win or anything like that. I like the idea of a desperate character doing something out of desperation far more than I like the idea of a character winning. And that's such a weird feeling to have because usually I'm, like, rooting for the good guys to, you know, destroy the villain and win the series and win the war or whatever. But it's so much more fascinating to have this broken editor, you know, who desperately wants the truth to come out about his girlfriend because, you know, he loved her and everything else. And I love the idea of just him completely and utterly losing it.
And you can tell that he's ready to do that because he is, I mean, he's so broken that he is willing to do this favor to the guy in the back of the car, to get a car. He obviously feels that he's got absolutely nothing else to lose. And the one sort of purpose that he can get for him to continue going on, as you will. I mean, he would almost seem suicidal, but to go on, he's got to be able to fight back and get, or just get his word out about Frank somehow.
Well,
to somebody who will listen.
All it took to trigger that was a picture of the president. That's all it took, and the fact that Dunbar was coming into town, like, that's all the trigger it took was just a picture of him. And though granted, yes, the president's going to be everywhere, and of course he's going to see pictures and whatnot, but it was just that's the moment it took was him to that and to get to here. Because, again, if Lucas would just let it go, you know, he'd be fine. And it's such a funny thing to see a character to see the moment when a character, if he just made the – and, again, we see this with Lucas all the time. We've already seen this with Lucas, and maybe that's why I tend to like this character of Lucas, is that we see the moment where – if he just turns the other way, it'll be fine. But because he keeps pushing, because he turns that way, it's like there's only one way for this to end. I mean, that's interesting. You know, of course, the writers may do something else, and who knows what that's going to be, for me at least, because I'm still kind of going episode by episode. But it's so much more interesting to have this character that's desperate and that sees Frank as, like, everything that's wrong with the world. And has to take action. That's a far more fascinating storyline than a sees Frank and we have to take him down. And I got to use a hacker, hopefully my hacker buddy who I haven't talked to yet to help me out, which is just like, that seems like it's such a weirder storyline. I'm just like, I honestly want Lucas to get to the point where it's just like, I have no choice.
So what
and then,
would
you know? Gets a gun and everything else.
We talked about this a little bit before show. But so what is it about? Okay. Cause you mentioned, Gavin.
Mm-hmm.
What do you not like? Because you said you don't like the idea of the two coming together, Lucas and Gavin. What is it about that you don't want? Why don't you want that in this show?
I think it's because it's such a It's one of those things of, that when it comes to writing that I get always kind of slightly annoyed. Like, I gotta put it this way. There's, as of late, there's only been one show that's really made me like having hacking and computer technology and stuff on the, on the air and like talked about
it. Mr. Robot?
Yeah. Mr. Robot's like so far the only one and done it well because it didn't overemphasize it and everything else. Like, everything else was also equally compelling. The thing I don't like about it is because it becomes a sort of like a rehash of the same time they were together. It's almost like, well, you're in prison, now you're out, let's try the same thing again. And just like, that seemed, you know, and then it's like, yeah, now I want revenge on Stamper too, because he's part of the presidency. Like, it seems this weird thing of like, I don't like the idea of having, because again, not because it's not a within their characters, it's like both of these are within each of their characters. It's just, it's far more compelling on a dramatic level to have a character that is willing to do anything and everything versus having a character that kind of teams up with a person that has access to the ways to do it and thinking of all the channels that could be done and all the weird ways they could go with hacking and things like that. You know, all it takes is an info dump and it's over.
Yeah.
And we've seen that happen many a time. We've seen that, you know, we saw that happen in this episode. All it took was a picture, you know, to get in Dunbar's hands on that, and it becomes already craziness. Imagine what would happen if Anonymous put, a paste bin out there and has all this compelling evidence to equivocate the president in terms of murder and everything else. I mean, that'd be cool. Like, that's a cool idea for the end of a series.
Right.
Like, that's a cool idea for like, the last bits, for sure. I like that idea.
And also, you know, Gavin, the last we saw of him, he was on an island somewhere in the south. I don't know where he was.
He's hiding smart. He's being smart.
Because out of the country.
Because he got a second bite at the apple, and he's not stupid.
And I don't think that Gavin really cares like, say, Lucas does. I think Gavin, the thing that Gavin always cared about most was getting himself and his buddies out of servitude.
I think he cared more about himself than anything else. The buddies were more of him trying to feel like he did something well. But I like the idea of also of Gavin being a self-preservationist. That's always fun. That's usually a very classic hacker motif, and I like him as that character having that.
Mm-hmm.
There's certain things I like about characters, and again, Lucas becoming this very much the husk of the man that he was, as sad as it is for him as a character, as sad as him for him, you know, obviously the person, you know, the character in the show, I like that character better than the idea of him taking down the dragon. Like, I like the idea of him taking a shot at the dragon, you know, to paraphrase what Frank said, you know, to Petrov, taking a shot at the dragon and getting burned. And I like the idea of having this guy that literally has nothing else to lose become that. And then again, and then eventually maybe that information gets out some other fashion, you know, maybe Gavin comes back in on his own to see that and kind of has his own redemption moment. Like, that's kind of cool too. But if it becomes they team up, and they try to slay the dragon, and they both fail. That's just like, well, I don't see the end, you know. And maybe this is what's going through my mind is because we're talking about the series, you know, one of these days hopefully ending. If these are all like great telegraph moments to set up the ending of a series, getting rid of these is like we're just going to be here for another season or two, aren't we?
Yeah.
Maybe that's what's going through my head. Maybe that's why I like the idea of Lucas being a broken character. Because it's rare that we see a broken character. We've only seen like Doug Stamper be broken.
Right, that's true.
And that was what made Stamper really interesting. That's what kind of made us endearing to him, even the fact that
a little bit of Peter Russo, but not for very long. That was fleeting.
Right, exactly. And I think that's what it is. Is that I liked when Lucas was obsessing. Because just like, man, if he would just go the other way, it was interesting. I mean, sure, I was frustrated with the character because I'm like, I want him to succeed because I can see the failing marks. But that got me invested. That got me hooked into the show a lot more, and I was like way more invested in this guy's storyline than anybody else's in that show. And then seeing it now again, him being be going down to rock bottom, like that's far more things for me to invest in than the fact that Claire wants to be, you know,
vice president,
whatever Claire wants to be, or that you know Petrov is dealing with
God.
Asylum thing.
Every
whatever.
Time they turn to the Russian story, I just kind of
Well, because it's essentially the same. It's like it's I know your tricks. The Cold War once again. It's like
It was you!
Back to the 80s. You know, let's have some fun with this one.
Exactly. So should we talk about our fine sponsors?
Of course we should. That's a great point. Because you know what? As much as we complain about characters, we cannot complain about our sponsors.
No.
Of course, we got our newest one for U.S. listeners. So you guys in the U.K., sorry, this one's ain't for you. That is, of course, 100tb.com, the place to buy dedicated servers, entry-level stuff, and all kinds of stuff. Actually, a really great, crazy server. So if you need some introductory virtual private servers, or maybe you just need some really, really beefy, you know, CDN access, you know, maybe you're doing crazy things like streaming video online or actually hosting some types of, maybe you want to launch the next YouTube. These guys can probably help you do it in terms of power and everything else. Like I said, it's looking at their cost service for your entry level from like $139 a month. That sounds really pricey to people who are used to like $5, $10 hosting kind of things. But when you really truly need, like bare metal servers and you need the power to do something like what Facebook does or what you want, not what Google does, but you need that power to just start that next startup that you have. Servers cost a lot of money and seeing like a bare metal server, essentially a box there, for as cheap as they have it and for as quickly as you can get it, that's insane. So I if you head on over to 100tb.com for more information. And of course we want to make sure we thank UK2.net as well. They also handle a lot of the more hardcore stuff. If you're of course in the UK and maybe you're looking for some your own hosting as well. Maybe you need some of that superpower stuff and you're like, oh, you know, why do the Americans get all the cool stuff? Well, UK2.net can help you out. They have a shared stuff we mentioned before, but they also offer virtual private servers as well and kind of beefier things if you need them. So you can kind of grow with them as well. So head on over to UK2.net if you're there in the UK and you're tired of your hosting provider. Like I said, if our old friend Charlotte Henry were here, she'd be screaming the praises.
Oh, Charlotte.
And I would too. And again, they're very, very good company, very, very well made, very well done. So if you, again, the US side, head to 100TB. The UK side, UK2.net.
Yeah, very good. And also, just as a side, something that we mention occasionally, but also the British Tech Network does have a Patreon.
Yes.
So if you like the show, you like all the other shows, there's a wealth of shows there. Go to BritishTechNetwork.com to check them out. And you can go to Patreon.com/BritishTechNetwork and throw a couple pennies their way.
Absolutely. All right, let's talk about the main storyline between these two episodes because we've got the interesting stuff out of the way.
Let's move into, I guess, the main sort of story here. And the reason I thought we could combine these two episodes is that basically in the first one, episode two, Frank kind of pulls a fast one on Claire and messes up her chances of getting the 30th district, which he promised her that he would support if she showed up to the State of the Union address, which she did. In an ivory dress.
His girl went behind his back and had her dying mother of all people, which was an amazing, like seeing that moment, I'm like.
And she's sitting next to Claire too.
Yeah. Seeing that moment. First off, there's two things. One, seeing, Claire's mother.
I see. Yeah. Go ahead.
I adore Claire's mother for everything that she is and everything.
I really like this character.
Well, because it's as silly as it sounds, you see where Claire gets it from, if that makes any sense.
Yes.
And I wish the two would make up and talk because there's things that she can do that's like, wow, I see where Claire gets it from now. It's never been Frank and that. It's been since, you know, birth and everything else. It's interesting. We see a lot of family stuff in these two episodes.
And actually, you're absolutely right because in the very beginning of episode two, it starts off with Elizabeth Hale, Claire's mother, in a room having tea with these women friends of hers who have apparently a lot of money to donate to campaigns, and she's telling them to support Dunbar.
Yeah,
and she's saying we've got to hide our money, of course, do it second remove, but give your money to Dunbar, and she's. You know, that's kind of, that is a very Claire-like move.
It very is. And it's interesting, you know, and I'm thinking about this. It's interesting between these two episodes that we see how family works with these two characters, Claire and Frank. Because even, you know, if we think about that moment with Elizabeth and then, you know, cut to the very end, with Claire and her, you know, and her screaming, you know, like Claire's like, I'll sell the house if I must. It's in my name.
Right.
Like, I'm the mother, you know, kind of very much that she's in charge and she's the Southern one. Cause again, she doesn't like, you know, much like Claire doesn't like showing a sign of weakness either. But what's interesting is contrast that with the last scene in episode 3 where Frank is talking about the picture of his father on how, you know, he saw that deal with the devil, so to speak. I think he said it. But that he was still proud of that moment, not because, as despicable as it was, but because his father was trying to do something. And it's kind of cool to see that, that every character has motivation in what they do, and I think Frank's big motivation is trying desperately not to be like his father, and desperately not, you know, try to make something out of himself, whatever that is, and not being afraid to do a lot of things against that, you know, and it goes without stating that, but we should probably talk about the State of the Union next.
Yes, yes. And for our British friends who may not be familiar, the State of the Union address is something that the president does. I believe it's just once a year or once a year.
Basically, I don't know what the equivalent is in British Parliament. I'm certain that there is an equivalent.
Where the prime minister would address.
Right. The idea being, if you don't know what the State of the Union is in the United States, then I'm saddened because I think even the BBC covers this. So
yeah, it's unfortunately.
It's okay. Everyone covers it because it's a very big policy, world policy building thing. Everything.
Well, a good point because you know there's that line where Frank says we'll talk to Petrov after, and said it'll be 5 o'clk in the morning. He's, like, he's going to be watching.
Yeah, of course he's watching. Like everyone's watching because it's
going to affect. Everybody wants to know. Doesn't want to wake up and find out the United States is going to war with them.
Right. Exactly. There's certain things. It's like right now. As much as anyone else, like people are always abreast of everything going on in the world. Welcome, you know, that's the news. But anyways, there are moments in the series that I have always dubbed the Frank Underwood FU moments.
his initials appropriately.
Yeah, the FU moments.
So was Francis Urquhart of the UK show.
You know, the SO moments for your British folks. I don't know if I'm allowed to say a type of artificial grass and the word off afterwards, but that kind of, you know, or the, you know, the jog, and then you fill in the rest for your UK people out there. This is one of those moments, and it was so amazing because I love how it started. Sabre's like Frank gets an idea because he gets a phone call essentially of like, you know, everything that's going on behind the scenes, which is amazing. It's so great. Cause Jackie was like, I can't help this breast cancer. And so they go around the, you know, essentially around the back. And it's so funny to see Frank go, hey, Doug, see if they have room for one more person. I'll make some revisions on the speech. Mm-hmm. It's like, do you want it to be written by anyone else? No, I'll take care of this one. Don't you worry. It's like, all right, get some work. You just see Frank crossing out entire sections. And it's like, oh, he's got a plan. I don't even know what plan he's got.
Mm-hmm.
And he just goes up on stage and delivers, like, it's such a beautiful moment because it's only an FU moment to, like, three characters or three, you know. It's like three people are out of the loop, and one of them is his, you know, his current wife, mm-hmm. Claire. It's so amazing to see just him going and, like, and I'm so proud that it's just like, cause all this, none of this stuff that's ever happened has been public. And it's so great for him just to smugly say all this stuff. And it's like, did someone tell him? It's like, was it this person? Was it Remy? It's like, no, why would Remy say anything? Remy doesn't care. And it's so amazing just to see the information gets there. And as opposed to, you know, like, the greatest part is that I think he gave Claire the moment to reveal it beforehand. Like, they had that little, like, meeting of, like, here's how everything you guys will walk out, you know, for the State of the Union and mm-hmm. stuff. Like, and it's like he gave her a moment to speak up.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you're right. Because it was right after that he went right back to his office and made all those changes. He was ready to...
Oh, yeah. And he it's so funny. It's so amazing to see just the smug FU. And it's one of those moments. It's what I love about Frank Underwood is that he can say a lot of these things, and no one else will notice because no one else knows.
Oh, yeah.
But by doing this, just this act that, you know, that on a political level looks great. It's like you're supporting breast cancer. You're trying to get research going. Yeah, you're helping, you know, you're helping out the minorities as well. You're not like any other politician. You stand by what your word is, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And that to know that that's the big middle finger to Claire and team is so amazing. You know, it's one of those things that I love to death, and I want more of that, but I know it's not going to happen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And Claire is really just kind of, there's absolutely nothing she can do about it at this point, which I thought also was brilliant, that she's stuck there sitting next to Cecil Jones, the daughter who's going to take over, and having to be the one to turn and applaud
like
to
clapping,
her.
Like, yeah! No one knows! And it's so amazing! It was, again, it was like this brilliant moment of because you see Frank looking around, and you see like the greatest thing. You see Jackie turning to the, you know, the First Lady, and you know, Claire turning to Jackie, turning to everything. It's just like this moment of like, oh, you thought I didn't know, and it's like, oh, I knew, mm-hmm. I, you know, and I'm you know, you're it was a great moment of that. And then we see the next episode, of course, with we're mentioning earlier on. Like the Beeline story, which is, I guess, you know, kind of reminiscent of what real politics is. I guess it turns out that in Frank's dad's past, he had partnered up in some capacity with the KKK.
There's at least a photo out there of him with a KKK Ku Klux Klan member. And you know, honestly, you know, if you're not really familiar with American history, in the last, you know, 50, 60 years, that it was a big, they were quite powerful in the South.
Yeah.
And particularly in small communities like the Gaffney, South Carolina, where Frank is from, that would have been a small town. They definitely would have had a lot of, the Ku Klux Klan would have had a lot of power there. So I guess the story goes that Frank's father had to kind of meet with them in order to save their farm. We don't know how. Or even if that story is true. Well,
I wouldn't doubt it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't doubt it. And it's very, I mean, it's like I said, the interesting thing about that whole stuff had nothing. I mean, the picture was interesting. I mean, it was cool seeing, you know, Dunbar. It's like, you know, that we're talking about the whole broken moment with Lucas and how he's like, you know, that was crazy. So how's the photo doing? You know, it's like doing really well. It's causing, you know, it's swinging things your way, and it's definitely cool. But I liked seeing Frank at that last moment before, you know, him, you know, before sort of Claire gives the ultimatum of make me VP or not.
When he discovers the earrings in the box, you mean? And he knows, he's like, I knew it was her. I just didn't want to believe it. Or
yeah, exactly. Hmm. But I love that last moment where he's like, he has the picture in hand and, you know, he's saying the words of that, though it's despicable, my father did. I'm proud of it. It's the moment I was most proud of him, because the idea of like him trying to do something, and it's very telling of Frank's character, what he finds prideful and what he finds meaningful, and the idea of taking action and you know, doing something, and I dug that moment, I think, of the episode with Frank, because we got to, you know, anytime we reveal a little more of Frank's personality, is always great, and that one was very revealing.
Absolutely, and Claire uses that at the very end when she says, demands basically that she become his running mate, and he says, you're absolutely insane, in no way. She says, well, look, I can be like your father too. I can do whatever it takes, but I won't give in. So you either, you know, you can either have me on your campaign, or I will ruin it for you.
Right. And I think what we're going to see, you know, her become VP, obviously become VP, if that doesn't happen, you know, his VP running mate, that doesn't.
But with this environment or this sort of tension between them, how successful could they be? You know, they are so.
The beauty part of Claire Underwood. And that's been her both her biggest flaw and her biggest strength is that she can't have Frank have the spotlight.
Yeah.
And that she will do anything within her power to make sure that she is equally there. She'll do crazy things like try to run for a small office in a small Texas town that she has no business running for.
Right.
She'll do strange, peculiar things like trying to be, a UN ambassador when she has no business being a UN ambassador.
Mm-hmm.
Her being vice president with Frank is nothing more than that. And while you think there's going to be tension and everything else, I have to imagine Frank is thinking in his head that this might be the way to figure things out. Because he's, despite all of that, Frank still loves her.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
And I think Claire does too, despite all this. It's just Claire cannot stand being
shut out. Yeah. Right. No, absolutely. And that's what I took from her saying, I can do what your father did. I can do whatever it takes. I kind of took that message as I can harm you if that's what it takes in order to make this right.
Right.
And exactly. In her mind, what is right is that they are equal partners in this whole.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Position.
Right. And what better storyline to tell than to say, we didn't want to reveal this yet because we hadn't figured it out yet. I mean, in terms of political storyline, but I think my running mate is my wife. She is there's a way to spin the story to be amazing, to be perfect, and that. And the fact of the matter, you had a lot of people who said in the past, you already saw that kind of beginnings that I'd vote for Claire versus, voting for Frank. What happens now that Claire would be officially on the ticket as VP. It's like, oh, well, that means I'm getting both of them. I'm getting both Underwood and that. And, if things go wrong with Underwood, then Claire comes in. And, knowing what Underwood, though, yes, the VP of the joke is like, it doesn't have any power whatsoever. But knowing what Claire has on Frank, so to speak, and vice versa, things will get done. And as silly as it sounds, the two of them are far more powerful together than they are apart. And it's something that, if you see in the series, when those two are working somewhat together or on the same page, at least, things happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think we're out of time, actually.
I think we are, too. There was one tiny thing that I wanted to bring up, but we don't have to talk long or at all about it.
There's the whole Russian story.
But... Well, no, it's basically Seth, because there's one kind of shocking scene where we see after the KKK photo is put out. First of all, why save that photo? I guess I know the answer. He saved the photo because it was the one time he was proud of his father. Okay. But the other thing is Seth takes a photo of him with the Civil War reenactor from his computer and then gives it out and then tries to blame Meacham for it. What is Seth thinking? Why? I mean, I guess he's really afraid he's going to be caught for sort of playing pool with Cynthia Driscoll. I don't know. Yeah.
He's scared of that and because he's not, the sad part about Seth is he's talented, but he's not that talented.
Yeah.
And he is not the biggest
thing. He could
thing.
Be replaced, yeah.
The difference between, the biggest difference between Seth and Doug is that Doug is loyal.
Yeah.
The difference between even Seth and Meacham is that Meacham is loyal.
Right.
And that and the weird sex stuff, but that's, yeah. That's not between you, me, and Claire and Frank, and they can do whatever the heck they want in their private establishment.
What goes on behind their bedroom door?
Whatever works.
We don't
works,
need to
I
know.
I'm going
to
judge. But the point being, Seth has always been this character that came in at the moment when he could swoop in and steal everything.
Right.
It's never been about loyalty, and Frank demands loyalty, and it almost feels like Seth is trying to fake it, because it's like, well, look, Meacham, you can't trust this, and you could trust me, even though that's not, at the end of the day, if someone offered him a bigger paycheck, he would probably go that way.
Absolutely. And I do think he is just really looking out for himself because he, you know, and the fact that he has this friendship, he pool buddy with Cynthia Driscoll, Dunbar's campaign manager, is that he's really kind of, they're both Cynthia and Seth seem like they are trying to make sure one of them ends out. They both kind of end out of this. Because one of them is going to go down. They're not Dunbar and Underwood won't both win. So no. One of them is going down, and if one of them goes down, then at least Seth might have a good end with the new administration. So it's
or just, vice versa,
right? Yeah,
right. Because ultimately, that's why I you know, that's the thing. It ain't about the campaign. It's about who wins and how much money am I going to get paid to keep you know. And that's fair. You know, job employment's important and everything else. I'm not gonna say that it's not, but that's ultimately why Seth does it, is that it's not, you know, Frank demands loyalty, Dunbar demands results, and, you know, neither of them really care about who ultimately wins, because in the end, it really doesn't matter.
Yep. Well, you know, it's great talking with you, Roberto, because you help me answer all my questions that I have, like, seconds after answering them, that I probably wouldn't think about if I weren't talking about it with you. So.
No, I mean, that's always the fun about talking to shows. As sometimes it seems like it drags on, it's always fun to analyze it and break it down.
Yeah.
But where can people find more episodes they want to catch? Maybe this is their first episode. How can they go back and check out more stuff?
You can do that by going to thebritishtechnetwork.com and look for the little icon that you see there at the bottom of our screen here, the recording, and go to the House Cards page, and you can catch all of our previous episodes. And, you know, if you want to go back to other seasons, where they're all there. And, yeah, but where can people find you, Roberto? What are you up to these days?
I'm easy to find. You hit me up on Twitter at Vincent404, or just simply go to cosmicradio.tv and watch all the pretty content there on all the podcasts I work on with a bunch of people and myself.
And our listeners should know you have a wealth of great shows there too, by a lot.
For sure. Feel free to hit up, watch a couple episodes of Cinematography. Maybe watch some no clips with Bryce while he plays, Brant as he plays Firewatch, everything else.
Awesome.
A whole bunch of stuff going down on the site.
Awesome.
For sure.
And I'm at JackieHearn81 on Twitter.
But what if they want to hit us both up? What if they want to give us their thoughts on this show? What if they want to? What if they saw something in House of Cards that neither you or I saw?
Well, I would appreciate an email, maybe. If you want to email me, you can email me at JackieHearn81 on Twitter. And I do have a telephone number. Well, I'll skip that for this week. But if you wanted to leave a voicemail number, I can do that too. So if you want to send me an email, you can also send us a video audio clip of yourself talking. If you want an MP3, we'll play it if you would like.
Yeah, let us know your thoughts.
Also, I want to give a shout or just sort of a message to our UK listeners. We would love to have a UK guest back on the show sometime. We want your perspective of the show, and also if you've watched the original UK series. There's a lot of comparison that could be made between this, and it would be great. So JackieHearnVoice@gmail.com would be the way to reach us.
There you go. All right, then, people. Well, that's it for today.
All right.
So, until next time.
Cheerio!
We're doing that again. We're doing the British thing again.
I just did it for your reaction.
Of course you did. I know. Take care.
Bye.